This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks for coming back and listening to this episode, number 621 of The Magic Word. We hope that you will tell others about this to help spread the word. So all you have to do is just share this on your social media. You can tell friends about it through email whenever you see them in live, up close, whenever you're at lectures, wherever it is, just ask them about the magic word. Have you heard the word? That is the magic word. No, the word is not a bird. The word is a bird. Never mind. We're not going to do that. So it is actually the word is magic. And so each week we talk about different things with different magicians on a variety of subjects. Boy, each and every one of these topics are diverse, and there is something here for everyone. And all you have to do is just go to the archives or to do a search using the search tool in the MagicWordPodcast.com website, and you can find whatever you're looking for in the world of magic. It's amazing. Go give it a try. Well, listen, this week, speaking of something unusual and different, we're going to go to I would start to say the dark side. Let me say the macabre side. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. It is not the Halloween season yet, but we are going to speak with someone who has moved from magic to mentalism to the bizarre, I guess is the best way to put that, to in which he has found his character. We have had many people in the past who have been guests here talking about how they have found their personality, their performance character, and everything. In this particular case, Chris Walden, who is my guest, has been on his own personal journey, which he shares in this episode, in talking about how he came, I wouldn't say full circle, but at least to a point in his life where he knows who he is and feels comfortable in his own skin. So it's not something that is a performing character or persona per se, but it is really him. He has come into his own being and feels, again, comfortable in his own skin and knows who he is 24/7 pretty much and lives that life. And that's something that's carried into his performances then as well. It is an interesting episode in which there are not mature themes here, but there are things that give pause for consideration as to some people who are at crossroads in their lives right now as you're listening to this episode and not sure about what to do or who you are. Perhaps this episode might help a little bit in some regards. And I think, as I said, there is something in all these episodes for somebody. And I think this may be one for you if you are listening. So anyhow, I hope you enjoy this. It's going to be an interesting ride and an interesting journey as we do a little bit of introspection into the life of this week's guest. So please welcome Mr. Chris Walden, perhaps better known as his alter ego, Saul Ravencraft, here on The Magic Word. We are today in Austin, Texas, actually just outside of Austin, up in the hill country, which is a beautiful time of year and a beautiful place to be, up in the hills and the beautiful vineyards and hills and rivers and lakes and everything out over here. And I'm visiting with a friend whom I've known for at least two decades, I'd say, or yeah, longer, it seems like, who is named Chris Walden, but he goes by Saul Ravencraft, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. But first of all, Chris, so good to see you again, buddy. Glad
Very
you're here.
Glad to be here. I want to say that I am really amazed. So I know performers that carry around a particular packet trick or or something around so that they can perform at a moment's notice.
Out of their pockets, yeah.
Right, right. And you have a podcast studio that you carry around in pretty much the same way. We're casually talking. You say, hey, would you like to record a podcast right now? And I look, and you have got this elaborate setup with a professional-grade recorder and microphone, real professional microphones with all the heavy-duty XLR cable and all that. And you just made a studio in the middle of this room. And I am very impressed by that.
Well, thank you very much. I must say, and I must give special thanks to the Friends of the Magic Word, those are the ones who financially pledge and give us donations, because without that, we wouldn't have these kinds of things.
He is not wasting your money. He is spending it on the good stuff.
Well, thank you. Yes, the reason that I do this is for you, the listener. I'm glad that you guys enjoy that. It gives me an opportunity, again, to kind of have this kind of, these are not really toys. These are part of my business.
No, it's amazing. I'm very impressed. You're the real deal, Scott.
Well, thank you. Well, and so are you, Mr. Saul Ravencraft. The reason, one of the many things I want to talk to you about, this is one of those episodes I kind of almost would rather keep and for the Halloween season, but I think that this is important that we know a little bit about this now. I know that a lot of mentalism and bizarre magic, let's talk about that just a little bit, about the difference between mentalism and bizarre magic. I mean, there is magic and mentalism, and sometimes they mix, and there are arguments about whether they should or shouldn't, and we won't be getting into that. But I'm just saying that mentalism is another form of magic. It's a form of entertainment, I should say.
Sure.
But bizarre magic and mentalism is different yet too. And there's another thing called storytelling, which I think is more aligned to bizarre magic than mentalism might be. Can you separate and define some of what I'm talking about?
Well, so my trip down the rabbit hole into bizarre and all of this, and away from what I think of as mainstream magic, recognizing that it was not necessarily my art form. I was a traditional magician. Mm-hmm. I won my TAOM award for a comedy act.
Boy, that was back in, what, 89 or something?
No, it was 2006.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. How quickly things have moved around.
Boy, really? Just, yeah.
I was blessed to make the acquaintance of Ed Solomon. Mm-hmm. Who was
in San Antonio.
Yeah, and he was a serious player in the bizarre community. Mm-hmm. I did not fully appreciate how serious a player he was until he passed away. And as he was in hospice, I was one of the people connected with the magicians community saying, hey, if you have a message to send to Ed, I think you need to do it now. Mm-hmm. And I went in with a stack of something like 35 notes that people had sent from all over the place, all levels of fame and dedication. Mm-hmm. And all of them.
And thanks and appreciation for what he had done.
Well, but it was deeper than that. Hmm. One of the themes I saw over and over was talking about how Ed seemed to be the only person that really understood where they were coming from.
Okay.
And the only people they could share certain things with. But they were completely different things. Mm-hmm. And Ed just had this universal way of connecting. I felt exactly the same way. I read all of the notes to him when he was unconscious, but I feel like he heard them.
What did he die of? What was his malady?
Well, he had had a stroke.
Okay.
And things were becoming complex from there. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think he had just
given up.
Become tired.
Yeah.
A lot of when he lost the ability to speak as a storyteller, that was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the point. He had lost his wife in the previous couple of years, and that was challenging. But dealing with Ed was very much about the storytelling. He had very specific ideas about what bizarre was, and that was really what informed me. I'd read some of the things like the altar flame and some of those kinds of things. I'd never gotten to go to any of the bizarre conventions. Mm-hmm. Because I hadn't really gotten deep enough into that, but Ed was the one that really pulled me all the way inside, and I recognized that there was this whole other world and this whole other perspective. And for Ed, it was so much about the story and so much about the context. And then for me, with my own personal preferences, I love immersion.
Okay.
Right? I played Dungeons and Dragons when I was in high school. Big surprise. Mm-hmm. I love to go to the Renaissance festivals and to places like Disney World and things
cosplay
like
that. Cosplay and all that.
That you could just immerse yourself in it. Mm-hmm. And cosplay wasn't so much around when I was in the middle of a lot of that stuff. Of course, it's a big thing now, but that's one of the ways that I look at things is not fake it till you make it. You cosplay yourself. Hmm. You immerse yourself in this idea. And as I went further with this idea of immersion and deep context about things, that's when Saul Ravenscraft appeared, because I felt that that there's a horror host in Austin who is not as visible as he used to be, Professor Griffin.
A horror host.
A horror host, like Elvira and Zachary and people who stayed up and watched the late-night horror movies on the weekends know what I'm talking about. These people that would sort of take you into this world. And I had a meeting with him at the Driscoll Hotel, one of the most haunted places in Austin. And he talked about that he felt when you were doing something that had a deeper context, that you needed to have a strong character. And I immediately started to dig into that. And that's when I found the name Saul Ravenscraft. It was originally Robert Ravenscraft, and he was going to be behind the scenes. It was going to do the traditional kind of things you've heard of in Bizarre Magic, where the performer is the chronicler, and he's going to tell you about what this other person did.
Okay.
And so his name was Robert Ravenscraft. He was going to be behind the scenes, and I was going to follow that.
Yeah.
And then I got into a mode when I started doing things with the Museum of the Weird, where I realized, oh, no, this guy needs to come out front. And Robert Ravenscraft just was too many notes.
Okay.
The name had to be one syllable at the front.
First name.
And Bob Ravenscraft just didn't sound right.
Yeah, that does. Yeah.
I know if you're going to follow the traditions of Bizarre Magic, he should be Tony Ravenscraft, right? Because there are so many Tonys in that realm. But no, Saul was something that jumped out at me because of the biblical connotations of some of that, and Solomon and some of that.
And Saul changed to Paul.
I went the other way.
Yeah.
And the fun thing, though, was when I was doing things at the Museum of the Weird, we would have audiences that were Hispanic, and they would call me Saul. And I thought, oh, I like that.
Yes, yeah.
That's my sexy name, Saul.
It almost sounds like soul, in a way.
Well, and there is a lot of that in there. Mm-hmm. And my goal for doing this, one, was to be able to create a context, but I also wanted to draw some strong lines between this universe and my day-to-day universe.
Okay.
Because when you start dealing with, if you're basically doing parodies of the weird stuff, then that's okay. But when you start doing it in a way where it gets fuzzy and we really try to go for immersion, I didn't necessarily want those people coming to my door. And so I decided that I was definitely going to do these things under this other context.
Okay.
And as time went on and this context became deeper and more real, and I started to have people that only knew me as Saul Ravenscraft and had no interest in any other versions of me. I find,
because you were immersed in that world, basically.
Right,
and so,
And I find myself becoming more and more immersed in it. I have had weeks when I've been doing mostly Saul stuff, and someone will Chris me, and I get confused.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Chris. Call you Chris.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Who? What? Oh, that's
yes, me.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a level of commitment that not everybody wants to go to. I hadn't planned on going that direction. But as I did things, and I've mentioned the Museum of the Weird, I guess I should
explain that. I do want to get into that. Before
we
do, though, I want to back up, because you touched on like 12 different things here. So before we move
Welcome
into that.
Welcome to my world.
and mine too. I can easily go down these many rabbit holes. Going back again to Ed Solomon, he changed his name to Nomalos.
Dinomalos, which was Ed Solomon spelled backwards.
Dinomalos is Ed Solomon backwards. And that's the thing, is a lot of people in the bizarre world change their names, just as Tony Andreuzzi had changed, or his name became Tony. He was before, what was he?
He was Tom Palmer.
Tom Palmer, right.
Who won comedy awards at TOM.
That's right. Upon whose act Johnny Thompson's The Great Tom Sony was based.
Right.
And all that's where that all came from.
Yeah.
And then he basically got rid of that act and decided he too was taking on this new character and this new persona and a new lifestyle, basically, of the satanic arts in his case, or whatever it was. And he kind of got off into the bizarre world, which is another thing. People who might, some magicians, might be thinking, okay, particularly gospel magicians or Fellowship of the Christian Magicians, might be thinking, no, bizarre magic is taking people down the wrong road. This is driving people to Satan, not to Christ. This is really for fun still. I think it's not, I mean, there is an element, I believe, of the it's not really an organization, but of a group, of any group. It's going to go off on one side or the other, but that's not the intent, correct me if I'm wrong, on what bizarre is.
Well, theater traditionally challenges the status quo, the authority. Mm-hmm. If you look at...
Isn't that what art is all about?
That's right.
Any kind of art, whether you visual art, performing art, audible, or whatever you're listening to and seeing, it challenges your intellect to think.
And just as Broadway shows will challenge the status quo of religious organizations, I think bizarre missions. Was that Freudian there? Bizarre magicians who are taking on this kind of context will also challenge the areas that they see as things that people need to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonderful thing is, if you are now my personal approach to bizarre magic. And I'm not even sure if I think of myself as a magician anymore. It's gotten weird. I use the tools of the magician, but I am also perfectly comfortable with doing something that has no magic tricks whatsoever, which I never thought would be the case. I had always assumed that I would always be connected to these things, but I find that storytelling and creating context for people to experience things goes beyond, let me show you something. And that's where it really got weird for me. So I can see where some people that, and if you think about it, things like the Society of Christian Magicians, their goal is to theatrically convey the ideas of their faith.
Correct.
People do this with varying skill levels.
Correct.
I have seen a few performances where the magic is very loosely tied to the theology.
Okay, agree.
Right?
Agreed. Yeah.
I cut and restored this rope, therefore Jesus loves you.
Yeah. Same thing with trade shows. Okay,
right.
I got three rings.
Right.
I got quality service and
right. Yeah, exactly. And these are all basically doing the same kind of thing. Creating a context for someone to experience something that is going to make them think. The Christian magician is looking around the ideas of faith, the teachings of Christ, and the ways that what you do in your life affects others and leads you toward your destination.
Right.
The trade show magician is looking at how these ideas are going to influence you to get your problem solved by this company. And in what I do, I grew up on shows like The Twilight Zone.
Right.
And
Outer Limits. And
Every anthology show that got into fantasy and science fiction.
Time travel.
And things are not what you think they are. Down the rabbit hole. That's very much the way I think of my world. And so my goal in a performance is to explore these things and see what you find, what you get, make you go, And it is completely aligned to those other things. It's just a different set of perspectives.
But going back again to just the name, again, it seems when people go from who they are to another name, it doesn't necessarily just happen in the bizarre world. I mean, I'm thinking, for an example, obviously Max Maven, who was Phil Goldstein, and Banachek, who was Steve Shaw, and there are others examples, of course, of
David
that.
David Copperfield.
Right, David Kotkin. So it's not just mentalists, you're exactly right, people who change their names. Years ago, I went by Great Scott, and when I first worked at Magic Castle, Bill Larson suggested that I use another name since there was another Great Scott out in the West Coast. And so I said, well, I'll just use Scott Wells. And so anyhow, people do seem to change their names, but the names selected by Bizarre seem to be more bizarre. Just Saul Ravencraft is an unusual name, as you said. You wouldn't be Bob Ravencraft,
right,
you know, kind of a thing. So when you change your name, it sounds like you also are at a point in your life where you're really wanting to make that change. And I'm saying that also because, again, when Banachek had decided to go from Steve Shaw, he was saying, look, I'm going to be making a major shift, a course correction in my life with my business and my direction. And likewise, it sounds like with yours, you rarely go by Chris Walden anymore. I mean, you feel more comfortable with people calling you Saul.
Well, and there are many traditions that people go through where taking on a name is part of the tradition. There's the old mystery schools and sects that you would go through where you would take on a name when you were initiated. Mm-hmm. In the Catholic Church, when you are initiated, you are confirmed into the Catholic Church, you take on your Christian name.
Correct.
Many people already have a Christian name, so they don't necessarily change it,
right,
but you have the option to take that on. And there are other traditions where you have that name that is your new identity as you move through that threshold. And so I think for people that get involved in Bizarre and people that are really getting very serious about, I'm going to walk through this door now, and it's not playtime anymore. So this new identity is me being serious and me really throwing my hat in the rain and me really putting all my
soul into
stake
it.
Into this. And there's no going back.
Huh.
That door's going to lock behind me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the performers, when they do that, and they do it seriously, and they take on this new identity, they get to leave all that other stuff behind.
Yeah.
All that failure, all the misfires, all the confusion, all the dorkiness that led them here, and then now they get to be this new thing, and the wings get to come out.
How did that happen then exactly with you? I mean, your journey as far as, did you wake up one day and decide I'm going to do this? But I mean, I know the answer to this. It was kind of a slower thing that happened, because as you're talking about, yeah, getting rid of all this dorkiness or whatever,
and right,
it's like, I am now, and you feel so comfortable in this skin, this is you. It's like, I'm where I always meant to be. It's kind of like a person, and I don't mean this in any negative way, a person who is decides upon what kind of sex they want to be, a transgender, you know, male or female, gay or not, whatever. It's kind of like they're coming out of the closet to the skin they feel they were born into, and they're comfortable from that point on. It's like, this is who I always really wanted to be. And so I'm drawing a parallel just to say, once you decide who you are, then you're comfortable there.
Well, and it's interesting. I love the language that you use there, because it shows the strangeness of this threshold. Because I think that transgender people and folks that are finding that their orientation, their identity is not exactly what
they're born
were
with,
introduced to
by their family,
right,
or their environment. Sure.
It's not a choice, it's a discovery.
Correct.
I know a number of people who have recently moved and transitioned and done all of that. And it can be confusing when you know someone through a certain lens and then the lens changes. But for every single one of them has said, I knew there was something going on there, and suddenly I figured out what it was, and now I am going to be that, because I always was. But somehow I had to, and I didn't understand it completely, but But wow. And I think it's the same thing. I know that it was for me that I realized, okay, all of this stuff has been a lifelong interest. I set a lot of it aside so I could work in corporations and do that sort of thing and not be too weird for that space. Mm-hmm. But when those barriers broke down and I allowed that stuff to bubble up, it was increasingly more complex and increasingly more upfront. And I think that is what the experience is more like, is peeling away all these layers, all these masks that you have laid on yourself, all the disguises you have had, mm-hmm. and going back to that inner self that loves the fantasy and loves the ideas and just wants to play in this space.
I remember hearing Darren Brown when he was on Broadway, and I went to see his show, and he was sitting in front of the audience, and in his opening remarks he talked about when he had come out as being gay, and he said, "I always worried about what people thought, and whenever I did announce and come out," he said, "I realized that people don't think about me. It's like I always wonder what people would think about me." Well, they don't think about me. It's kind of like, what was I worried about all these years? There was nothing. I was the one being worried. They didn't care. I mean, I think we're in that society today where it is much more accepting. Sure, there are those who don't, but it's certainly better every year as we move forward in the world where there is that acceptance. And also, people don't worry about. There are other things of people's lives we're worrying about, of, you know, paying the rent, you know, and paying your electricity bill and food for tonight, you know, whatever. Oh, this guy's gay? Okay, well, that's not changing my world, you know.
This just in, obscure stranger reveals something no one cares about.
There you go. Thank you. There you go. End of story. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, good. So that's why I think not having any secret like that, I can't relate to what people are saying. Yeah, but you don't know, Scott. You know, okay, agreed.
Your time may be coming.
So I can't relate to that, but it would seem that once they do come out, they will be glad and say, why didn't I before?
Right.
My kind of, again, point I'm getting back to is when people are listening to this episode and thinking about, yeah, I like magic and I also like mentalism, but, you know, I really like storytelling and trying to move my audience emotionally. And few things do, like bizarrism. For an example, when I, before a seance, would do, let's say, an invisible deck, and I have a little skeleton hand or something, and I have a completely different presentation about it, about a child who had mm-hmm. died or whatever, and mm-hmm. we're going to see if this child, we're going to play a game because there's this miniature deck, and it's an invisible deck, and you have use a glorpy hanky, you know, to make mm-hmm. thing rise.
Sure.
The presentation of that freaks people out, as opposed to, hey, think of a card, what color, you know, et cetera, and it's upside down. Boom. Hey, well, that's a mystery. But if you build a story around it, it is a completely different experience. And as people realize that, they may want to go in that direction and then eventually do more and more of it and say, you know, I think it's about time that I need to make that cut from being Chris Walden to Saul Ravencraft and come up with another name. You know, like my name backwards is Slew Tox. I've thought about that before, you know, Slew Tox. Just like...
No, that sounds more like an adult film name.
Oh, you saw it? You're one of the two people, I think, who saw that film.
Your hair was darker then.
That's right. I had these garter belts. Hold on, and knee socks. So anyhow, back on that.
Well, and I think what is key to that is there was a point on one side of the doorway where I had that kind of idea that, okay, how do I spookify my magic? Yeah, right. And I would be thinking about that. And I did some really clumsy stuff in the beginning mm-hmm. because I really didn't have any connection with this context. It was like the 12-year-old boy who's read Greater Magic and has decided to use patter about
traveling
their trip to India.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And you're like, well, no, you never did.
Yeah, sure.
And
I become more believable as I've gotten grayer.
Right. And as you do travel to India and you see what it's really like. And you become more informed by your experience and more informed by your genuine interests. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when the real threshold for me was I actually was doing an exercise where I was studying things about magic, you know, ritual magic, beliefs in magic and history, because I wanted my magic to feel more magical. Mm-hmm. Right? I was going to use this material to lie to people more effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I felt that somehow these ideas were deeply embedded, and so if I could kind of fake those ideas, mm-hmm. then people would relate to my magic, which is kind of nefarious if you think about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it was a very...
It's like an honest con.
Pardon the thinking, but it was a very magician-y way to think about it.
Okay, fair enough.
And as I'm going through this, I would read an idea, and I would go, huh, well, that kind of makes sense. And they're going, oh, wait, Chris, you silly person, you're getting fooled by all this stuff. And then I decided, okay, let's go ahead and apply this a little bit. So I sat down with some divination tools. I didn't use the Skeptic's Guide to Divination, the Magician's Guide to Numerology, or something like that. I mm-hmm. went and found what I felt were things legitimately trying to teach these ideas.
Okay.
And I worked through them just to see what I would see. And I went through my first exercise and went, huh. It was dealing with my name. At the time, I was using the name Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
Because
sophisticated,
and I was sort of going to go without the last name, right? I was
just one name,
Christopher.
Sure.
Yeah, right. That's going to get him going.
I like it.
I'd been Chris all my life.
Yeah,
and I looked at what the numbers said about Christopher. I didn't really like what this said. In fact, it pointed out areas that I was struggling with and frustrated with about myself. And then I looked at Chris, and Chris had a little more, there was a little, we'll call it flakiness that went along with that.
Yeah.
But a lot more connection with creativity and the kinds of things that I wanted to see in myself. And I honestly, the next day, went to the things where I had stuff signed up, and I changed my name back to Chris and went back to that mode. And then I
got rid of all your old business cards. And
yeah, yeah. I mean, seriously. And I realized, oh, my God, you just made a decision based on numerology.
Wow.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure how to feel about
that. How did that make you feel?
It was weird. But then the weirder thing was, as I kept digging into this stuff, I would go places. I remember going to a place where a Pagan's Night Out was going on. And whatever the witchy equivalent of gaydar started going off for people. And they'd point at me and go, hey, you are like, no, 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 no. And they go, oh, I think so. And I, no, 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 no. And then it just got strange. Things did start to happen.
Okay.
And I had a friend of mine that was a lifelong practitioner that sat me one day and she said, okay, you are doing things and you probably need to start doing them on purpose or someone's going to get hurt.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. And I thought about it and I went, no. And she started pointing out things where my will appeared to be having an effect. And I still wasn't sure how I felt about this. But that was a weird way to get called out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started paying attention. And I would say that was the moment that things really crossed over for me. Very, very strange place.
And so when you say the crossover, so what did you start doing differently then?
Well, one of the things I think on one side of that equation was I did have the sort of BS thinking when it came to this. None of this matters. None of it is real. If I'm going to pretend to invoke a spirit,
so you didn't have conviction.
Matter.
You weren't convinced yourself. You mean you in
right,
the back of your mind,
right.
You kept thinking, okay, it's still fun.
Yeah,
you have to have that conviction if you want the audience to be convinced.
Well, and a level of caution came up.
Mm.
You know, wow, maybe this could actually do something. So maybe I need to be a little more careful about what I'm invoking. Maybe I need to be more careful about what I'm doing. And maybe I need to be a little bit more compassionate with people who tell me they have experienced things or done things, and not be so arrogant about that. And that'll turn you upside down.
Along about that time, wasn't that when you were doing your coast-to-coast kind of weekly podcast for those 3 years?
That
the Shadow Hour?
That was very tied into it, because this whole thing just
Explain, talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
So I hit this point where I am filled with all these confusions.
Sure.
And I see your face as I talk about this, imagining what like that would be like for you. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird place.
Yeah.
And so I needed to step away from magic. Mm-hmm. Now, I had recently won a comedy award for TOM. Yeah. And theoretically was, but everything moved around, and this dissatisfaction appeared that I needed to understand. And so I stepped away from magic. I started this podcast on a whim called The Shadow Hour. If you poke around, you can find the archive. There's about 150 episodes. Some of my guests were on Coast to Coast AM, which I'm very proud of. But my goal was for every guest to not bust their chops, but to let them tell their story.
About
whatever.
That had to do with the bizarre.
Whatever they were doing.
So it could be alien abduction.
One guy was looking at UFOs through night vision binoculars. I had a man who had had demons pursue his family in his home. I talked to an exorcist a couple of times. All over the map. Mm-hmm. All over the map. You were a guest on that podcast.
Right.
We talked about the seances you were doing in Houston. Mm-hmm. And as you recall, I didn't talk about it like it was a magic show.
That's correct.
You present it however you wanted.
Yes.
And we got into some really interesting conversations about the modes and the approaches and
audience perceptions and everything.
And,
sure.
And everything mm-hmm. like that. And I thought that was a very interesting discussion. I know it didn't go exactly the direction you had originally planned
it wasn't,
on.
Yeah. Jamie Salinas and I did that with you, and it did not go the direction I thought, but it was very interesting. It's true.
And you guys were a really good interview, too, because we didn't talk about putting on the show. We talked about the context of what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was live, too, as I recall.
It was live.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys got to be full on context and completely immersed in what you were describing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who listen to that podcast will not feel that you were talking about a magic show that pretended to be a seance.
That's correct. We want people to believe
that was the seance experience people would have.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my whole goal for that. And when I came out of the other side of that,
yeah.
And I quit doing it for financial reasons, just okay. the place, the outfit that I was using,
the domain started
charging more than I was willing to pay. And, mm-hmm. and I didn't have the sponsorship that you attained to buy all this lovely equipment. and so I decided to just bow out at that point, because quite honestly, it is hard to do these things. It is hard to do them regularly.
Yeah, tell me.
And I decided that it was time to turn that energy in another direction. And then when I started moving back into the performance arena, I had a whole other perspective.
You
of
would
everything.
Because of all the people you talk to. You now right. have all these experiences from other people that you could bring in stories saying, I heard this guy say once such and such.
Oh, but it went further than that, because what I would do is before every podcast, and you experience this, I would always have a pre-talk with people
yeah.
that would take between half an hour to an hour. Mm-hmm. And my goal was I wanted our live conversation to not be the first conversation they had ever had with me.
Mm-hmm.
That way they already trusted me. Mm-hmm. They already knew where I was coming from.
Good point.
They knew I wasn't trying to wrestle with them or anything like that.
Yep.
And that made it more comfortable. And occasionally there would be conversations that we'd have that go, oh, that one's good. I'll make that one happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the live show, I would bring up that same idea, and we would essentially replay that conversation we had had. Mm-hmm. And then we would do the broadcast. And afterwards, I would always call them right back.
Yeah.
And I would say, thank you, thank you, thank you. You were amazing. And sometimes we'd end up talking for another hour.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some conversations that happened in that that never made it onto the air.
Yeah.
One of the fascinating ones was I was talking to a medium.
Okay.
And I asked the question, one that did make it on the air is, okay, so you're talking to spirit. Why are you having difficulty spelling their name? and there were answers about that. Another one that I asked was, how do you tell the difference between what you're receiving psychically and what you're just making up?
Okay.
He said, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it comes from the same place. And I went, okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And he explained that essentially that part of your brain is where these things come from, that the place where stuff pops up. And you learn to discern.
Right.
You learn to check out ideas that come to you kind of randomly. And eventually you develop an understanding of what is given to you and what's more in the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how I felt about that. I understand it a little better now. But I decided I didn't have to judge it, just take it in.
Sure.
And it's a perfectly reasonable idea. And as a storyteller, I'm sure going to use it.
Right.
Right? And in that internal dialogue, which is where most of this stuff happens,
I
learned to be a lot less fake about things because I was bringing more and more real stuff, which means that every once in a while, we kind of do it for real.
Well, talking about visiting with people prior to the podcast, I would say 80% of the people I talk to are those like you, whom I've known for a long time, and we have had lots of conversations or mutual things we have shared together or broken bread, had a drink or whatever over the years, worked together at some point, so we're not kind of having a first date kind of
right.
thing. There are those, in your case, almost everyone, it seemed like probably is like a first date. So you do need to have a little bit of a pre-date, I guess, to kind of talk things through to see what you want to say.
I think it made a big difference, too. I'm so glad I decided to do it that way.
That's a great idea for people who might be thinking about having a podcast of whatever it's going to be, whether it's sports or whatever it might be, certainly to have kind of a pre-thing to show, to know what you're going to be discussing. Well, you talk about the Museum of the Weird a little bit earlier, and I want to circle back to that then now, because I also recall not only was it or is it a static museum physically people would go to, but I remember, again, going back to Jamie Salinas and the seances, we went to a ghost show one time, and there are these kinds of things where they have lectures and all kinds of people who will display, and we went to see some of the stuff, and you had the Museum of the Weird on tour, and you had that as one of the exhibits at the
this
show.
That's right. I was invited because of the Shadow Hour.
Oh, is that why?
The man who organized that, it was in Huntsville, wasn't it?
I think it was over in Louisiana, was it?
It was in that area.
Somewhere
he was
around,
from Huntsville. Not important to the conversation.
No.
But it was over way in East Texas, and I was invited to come as a guest because I'd had him on the Shadow Hour, and he was putting this thing on, wanted me to come along, invited a buddy. Then I talked to the owner of the museum. I said, hey, you know, maybe we could do this thing. And he's like, oh, I've been wanting to do a portable thing, so let's try it. And so we all trooped together and, you know, had a little convoy over there. On the way, I got to introduce a friend of mine to Herb Albert. He had never heard Herb Albert before. We're like, oh, man, no. You got to hear Taste of Honey.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was a lot of fun. I set up my booth and recorded a little bit, and there was the museum there. That was when I was still very much Chris Walden. It was in that transitional period.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, I started to do things at the museum, and that's when Saul Ravencraft came out front.
So tell me more about the museum, because I was a guest. I went through, and you took me on a tour, and that's is it still available to people
to
tour?
So the museum is still open. It has changed. There are no performers anymore, largely because of COVID. But I think also that was always a strange area for him. Mm-hmm. When I first started performing at the museum, he had the upper area where the wax museum is now. It was basically just a big empty room with a stage.
Okay.
And it was so weird because the room was maybe 30 feet deep. And he had put up like this 3-foot stage in there because he wanted to store chairs underneath it. I said, well, that's going to be a weird stage space. He's like, but I got to store the chairs. Okay. and so what I would do is I would just sit on the edge of the stage because it's too weird being up there with the audience so close. And the lighting, you know, this track lighting. So I brought in my own lamps, just like table lamps, ornate table lamps. And I set them on either side of the stage and I dimmed the lighting and made it much more intimate and personal. And I just kind of held court. Because there hadn't been worked out an idea of the tour and timing or anything
didn't see
like
but
that.
What, 30 people or so?
Yeah. And so people would just come in and stay as long as they wanted and just do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really interesting time.
Bizarre stuff.
Well, it was minimalism. There was probably some stuff in there that was a little more magic-y than I do now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just exploring this interaction. It's also where I had one of the most important experiences as a bizarrist slash mentalist. I was doing a piece. Bob Cassidy's Name and a Place is one of my staples.
I love that trick.
And I've done it for Trace Beaulieu from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Really?
Yeah, he was a guest of the museum. And
he must have been impressed. That's a good trick.
He laughed at my jokes in the wax museum.
But at this point,
I wasn't doing the whole thing. I think I was doing more of an Osterlund Center kind of a thing. And I had the person put a name down. I wasn't asking for a special name or a dead name or anything creepy.
Right.
Just a person to think about. And so I'm doing the thing, and I get the name. Name was Daniel.
Okay.
I'll never forget it. And she started to cry. And it started to, like, ugly cry.
Mm.
And suddenly, everything I had ever been told as a baby magician flooded back to me about how anytime anyone connects with what you're doing, that you're going to break them and you're going to hell and everything. I was like, oh, my God, it's all true.
Yeah.
And I, now what I do? And you know, there's the instinct that you're taught, if anyone starts to actually have an emotion, to tell a joke or something and derail it. But I just shut up.
Mm.
I stopped. One, because I was just shocked.
Yeah.
And it just, I couldn't think of anything to say that mattered in that moment. And she's got two friends with her, and they're looking at me like, oh, you a-hole.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then she went, no, it's
keep
okay.
Going. Yeah.
I'm like, all right. And she tells me that Daniel was a friend of hers in high school who had committed suicide. And she had always wondered if he was all right. And she decided that me saying his name meant he was okay.
Okay. Wow.
And I didn't say a whole lot. I just thanked her for being open with that, and I'm glad that was good for her, and nobody, you know,
saved
stabbed me or anything. But no, and I thought about that for a long time, because on the one hand, my understanding was that was bad. But on the other hand, something really good seemed to happen from it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I recognized was that I hadn't decided what it was. She did,
yeah.
And because I'd had all this experience interviewing people about all this wacky stuff, I was able to approach it without judging. Mm. I didn't judge her. I didn't judge myself. I just let it be. And that started to filter into what this universe might be. And so for me, seance and that kind of thing, yes, there are horror stories from the 20s about this kind of thing. But there are also, you know, I've attended the First Spiritualist Church in Austin a few times to see what they do, to see what that feels like. And it wasn't anything like what I was told. It was just this whole other thing. And it just suddenly the universe was weird and I didn't understand it. And one of the things I think that happened to me was I decided that it wasn't my call and that I could enjoy a universe that had monsters and vampires and witches and wizards and all of that stuff, and that I didn't have to mansplain to anybody whether or not it was real.
Yeah.
I don't care if Bigfoot is real or not. I would just rather live in a universe where he might be.
Yeah.
And so for me, I became much more engaged with the fantasy of it all. And as a performer, that is where I feel that my role is. I had a weird dream where I could use the Force and I could call things toward me and I could push things away from me. And when I woke up from that dream, I had felt the experience so strongly that if I reached over and I felt that little click in my palm that I felt in the dream, I knew if I'd made this motion, your recorder would fly into my hand. I knew that. And when I woke up from my dream, my glasses were on the other side of the room just as the dream had began. And I had to try it. And I reached out and I felt nothing. And I said, damn it. And got up and went and had the rest of my normal day. But that dream was so real to me that I decided that as a magician, maybe my job is to give people the opportunity to feel what these things might be like. And to decide for themselves what that means to them. You know, if you give the gift of this wonderful experience, where people go, wow. And their brain is starting to go, hey, maybe I'm more powerful than I think of. And I can go and ask for that promotion. And they go, but it's all crap. And they go, oh, never mind.
You feel as if you were empowering people.
And then I started to experience that in performance. And I have some people that think of what I do as magic, tricks, and I'm okay with that. I'll skirt around it a little bit conversationally because I think that's a boring conversation. I think it's much more interesting to talk about the ideas around this stuff. But I also find that a lot of people that like these ideas. And one thing that started happening when the vibration changed was I would have people that after a show, you know, when I did magic tricks, people would come up to me after a show and they'd say, oh, do that again. How'd you do that? I saw this guy who was better than you who did this other thing, right? All that stuff. And I don't get that anymore. What I started getting from people is they'd come up and they'd look both ways and they'd say, let me tell you what happened to me. And they would tell me some story of a thing that they saw or they experienced.
Right.
That they didn't tell anybody. And they would tell me
personal.
This thing. Yeah. And they would ask me what I thought about that. And I'm like, wow, this is something different.
Do you see yourself as a therapist, as a bizarre therapist in a way?
Well, so I would not use that term.
Yeah.
Because that's...
has a different connotation.
That's a... But I mean, just yesterday, I was at the Central Machine Works in Austin. I worked with Merlin as Archimedes the Owl in the morning, and then in the evening, I was doing readings, palms and numerology. And I had a few people that sat down. They always come at the end. right? Yeah, people ignore you for a while, and then at the end, you get like two or three people who sit down, and they really are serious about something.
Okay.
And the way that I approach readings is always very action-oriented. It talks about elemental energies and what's going on with you and how you're going to use what you got.
Yeah.
It's not about the future. It's about where you're pointed and how do you do that. And I find a lot of interesting conversation in that, because when I go through some of this stuff and we get into what people's actual natures are, which I have a little experience with in my journey.
Yeah.
And they're told, well, you're like this. And they go, yes, I am. And that's normal.
Yeah.
And if you approach your life like you're like that, instead of this other way that you're trying to be, maybe it'll be better. And that ends up being the conversation a lot of times. And I find all kinds of interesting contrasts, talking about different styles of energy and how they work with each other and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it even though it's not pointedly therapy, they will ask questions about this stuff. And I have a belief system that connects with some of these ideas, and I'm not afraid to talk about that kind
right.
of thing. And so many times people are just satisfying their curiosity, but sometimes they're looking for something else. And in the past, I was really reticent for that, but now I've recognized that what I can do without crossing certain lines.
Right.
Health is always about your doctor.
Yes.
Mental health is always about your doctor. But trying to look at your own context and what your urges and desires and goals are and how you don't feel that you're allowed to be that, I'm perfectly happy to have that conversation with anybody. And I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think that's any different than sitting down with someone over a cup of coffee.
And helping to encourage them basically to be who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. No, I think you're absolutely right. But most people question a lot of things in their lives and wonder, where am I in the total scope of things? And the younger a person is, the more they question, wondering, what am I going to be? What am I going to do? What's my purpose in life? And trying to find that character and who they are.
I'm glad that we don't do that at all at our age.
Yeah. The search goes on. It does.
The road goes ever on.
That's right. Well, speaking of that, this podcast cannot go on forever.
That's
I would
a shame.
Like it could. But I would like to close by asking you about your magic word, because the name of my podcast is called that. So what is your philosophy of life?
So my philosophy of life, I'm gonna quote Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm. Which would seem most appropriate for this.
But I think what it says is very important. Do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under will. And what I see, what I gather from that is that, one, the way that you want to encounter the world, the way you are driven to encounter the world,
mm-hmm.
is fine. Now, you're going to have to work out some parameters to be in society.
Okay.
But you shouldn't be afraid of who you are.
Yeah.
And should have discipline over the darker areas and embrace the lighter areas and want what you want and pursue the goals that feel good for you.
Yeah.
And it all needs to be encompassed by love. And love is not about just getting it on with somebody.
Yeah, not
right?
a physical. Yeah.
Love is about, although, that you know,
that's
there's aspects of that.
Sure.
But love is that recognition of the connectedness between each other, right?
Right?
You and I experience a kind of love for each other.
Correct.
It's shown through respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's shown through our interest in, mm-hmm. in each other's ideas,
mm-hmm.
and our ability to encounter that kind of thing. But will is that ability to put sustained concentration on something that you want to achieve, something you want to bring into the world.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the red car, like Joe Vitale always talks about, right?
Okay.
Or it could be harmony among people you know, people that are troubled, the world.
Right.
Right? And the only way that these things come into your world is through sustained concentration and belief. That's the real magic. And so to me, knowing what you want, having respect for the other people so that you're not too evil about it.
Right.
And being willing to stick it all the way out so that you see it come. That's what it's all about. And that's what I'm trying to do in my world. It's hard, though.
You're doing it well.
Well, thank you.
And it's a lifelong goal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Saul. I appreciate this.
Thank you very much, Scott.
It's been a wonderful chat and exploring that, because I think that this will resonate among a lot of people who are at different crossroads in their lives. And they may be thinking, I'd like to listen to this again. I think I will. Thanks again, Saul.
Thank you.
So until next time, that was Saul Ravencraft. This is Scotty out. Wow. Thank you very much, Saul. That was quite interesting. Not exactly the direction I thought we were going to be going from the beginning when I asked you to sit down and have a chat, but it went exactly where it should go. And I appreciate you spending the time with me and sharing your innermost soul and your thoughts about how you had become the bizarrist you are, and living the life that is comfortable for you. And I think that is great. And so congratulations. And hopefully this will be an inspiration then for others who have listened to this episode and are wondering about trying to make their own decision as to who they are and what they want to be. So very good. Thanks again, Saul. I appreciate that. And I also thank you listeners again for tuning in. You can really help us if you enjoyed this episode and the Magic Word in general, if you will just like us on whatever platform you hear your podcasts. And in other words, if you use Android or you use an Apple instrument, or if you're listening to us on Spotify, FeedPress, through iHeartRadio. I'm sure that all those podcast platforms have places where you can indicate your interest and your like for this, whether it's going to be 5 stars or thumbs up or whatever, plus ability to give your comments on this podcast. So I appreciate that, and that helps us grow our listenership. And if you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will see how you can subscribe to our weekly pod letter to keep up to date on all of our podcasts from week to week, and also when we have contests and different things that are happening. We have an exciting upcoming few months in for the rest of 2021. It's just going to be off the hook crazy. If you enjoy magic conventions and you can't attend all of them, well, I'm going to try to attend as many as I can and giving you some daily updates and reports from the convention floor, so you can feel as if that you're there even if you can't make it. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to pursue goals that feel good to you with love for and connectedness with each other, and be who you are. And as they say, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. This is Scotty out.